Hi, this is Shaylin Hudson. I make candles for Scene Creations, and the price is anywhere from $3 to $8. If you'd like to contact me about purchasing any, you could call me at 907-401-1095.
You have a Facebook page? No? Hello, and welcome to Horror After Hours, coming to you from the motor vessel Kennecott. I am your host, the naughty guy, Adam J. Tonight, I want to talk about two old favorites. Children Shouldn't Play With Dead Things, released in 1972, and A Christmas Story, made in 1983. So let's start with Children Shouldn't Play With Dead Things. This film is also known as Revenge of the Dead, Zreeks, Things from the Dead, and Things from the Grave. So anywhere you go in the world, this movie's got a different name, I guess. This was directed by Bob Clark. It had a modest budget of $50,000 and grossed roughly $70,000. So the plot is, the story focuses on a theater-related troupe led by Alan, played by Alan Ormsby, who is a mean-spirited director who travels with the others by boat to a small island that is mainly used as a cemetery for deranged criminals. To have a night of fun and games, once on the island, Alan tells the group, which he refers to as his children, of numerous stories relating to the island's history and the buried inhabitants. He leads them to a cottage where they're supposed to spend the night. He then opens up a chest that they had brought with them, puts on a mystical robe, and he says that they are to prepare for the summation of at midnight. Alan takes sheer delight in torturing his cast with threats of firing them if they do not do as he pleases, which always makes them go along with his plan, which a bunch of douchebags for listening to him. But at midnight, using the grimoire, Alan begins a ritual to raise the dead after digging up the body of a man named Orville Dunworth, played by Seth Sklari. Though the original intent of the ritual may have been solely as a joke, Alan appears disappointed that nothing happens. Val takes it upon herself to do the ritual to bring down a curse upon the devil himself. Afterwards, the party continues, and Alan goes to extremes to degrade the actors, using the corpse of Orville for his own sick jokes. Then, however, animated by the ritual, the dead return to life and force the group to take refuge in an old house. Unfortunately for them, the dead get their revenge, taking them all one at a time. In the movie's closing credits, we see the horde of zombies boarding Alan's boat with the lights of Miami in the background. Cue the creepy music. So that was the plot. And despite the atrocious over-the-top acting and meager budget, I really enjoy this movie. This one really holds a special place in my heart. I was introduced to this one by my grandmother, Violet, and everyone knew her as Stretch. She showed it to me when I was about 13. She also was a huge fan of horror movies, and maybe that's where I get it from. But who knows? I love my grandma. This movie had a genuinely creepy feel to it, which is one thing lacking in most horror films nowadays. There are always too many little jump scares. There is no tone setting or real storytelling like was done in these older movies, before all the computer animation anyway. Okay, so the effects in this movie are a little cheap. But then, I've never had a problem with cheap zombie effects. It's the idea of a zombie that is so frightening. Not the makeup necessarily, they are irrational and unrelenting. Even if it's a rubber mask they're wearing. But the zombies in this movie are very effective. They come late, but when they hit as hard as Night of the Living Dead. The music score is eerie, and so is the locale. The whole setting in the entire movie. Very creepy all the way through. You can almost feel the fog creeping up on you. Where this one really distinguishes itself, however, is the weirdo factor. It flirts with gay stereotypes and necrophilia, Satan worship, Jewish humor, and seriously bad 70s hair and clothing. The film is a lot smarter than it appears for cheap exploitation horror. It's surprisingly grisly for a PG and far too tame for an R. It's too funny for horror and too creepy for comedy. In other words, it's perfect. I love this one. They had intended to remake it with its original creator at the helm. Bob Clark became an iconic movie director and has directed one film that is selected for the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant, which is A Christmas Story, 1983. But he's got some really great movies to his credit. And we start with Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, 1972. Black Christmas, 1974. Death Dream, also 1974. Porky's, 1981. A Christmas Story, 1983. Porky's 2, The Next Day, 1983. Turk 182, made in 1985. Loose Cannons in 1990, and the list goes on. But these are just some of the ones that I know of. I give Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things a rating of 4 chainsaws out of 5, as this will always be a special one for me. So continuing on, we go to A Christmas Story, 1983. Everyone knows and loves this movie. Christmas is approaching, and 9-year-old Ralphie wants only one thing, a Red Ryder range 200-shot BB gun. When he mentions it at the dinner table, his mother's immediate reaction is that he'll shoot his eye out. He then decides on a perfect theme for his teacher, but her reaction is like his. He fantasizes about what it would be like to be Red Ryder and catch the bad guys. When the big day arrives and he gets lots of presents under the tree, including a very lovely gift from his aunt that his mother just adores, which was the Pink Nightmare, a.k.a. the Pink Bunny Suit. But what about the BB gun? Well, this movie has an interesting origin. This is how A Christmas Story came to be. The movie A Christmas Story is arguably one of America's favorite holiday films. Over the years, this modest little movie has grown into a Yuletide perennial. The movie A Christmas Story might never have been made had it not been for another, decidedly less reputable comedic creature. Porky's. That's right. One of the most beloved holiday movies largely owes its existence to an infamous, unabashedly crude teen comedy. I loved Porky's, by the way. In the late 1960s, A Christmas Story, director Bob Clark, was driving to a date's house when he happened upon a broadcast of radio personality and writer Gene Shepherd's recollections of growing up in Indiana in the late 30s and early 40s. Clark wound up driving around the block for almost an hour, glued to the radio until the program was over. "My date was not happy," Clark said, "but knew right away of wanting to make a movie out of these stories, many of which first appeared in Playboy magazine and were collected in Shepherd's 1966 book, In God We Trust, all others pay cash. Clark's adaptation, however, didn't happen overnight. At the time, he was a journeyman director who specialized in low-budget B-movies. For years, Clark tried to find a studio to finance the film, but none were interested. Nevertheless, Clark held on to his ambition to bring Shepard's stories to the screen. And in 1981, he directed Porky's, which became a hit at the box office. Suddenly, he had some clout to bargain with. In the wake of what hit the studio wanted a sequel to Porky's. Clark agreed to make the sequel if the studio agreed to let him do A Christmas Story first. Modestly budgeted, Little Comedy opened in 1983, the week before Thanksgiving, on fewer than 900 screens. The film took in about $2 million on its first weekend and double that Thanksgiving weekend. Solid business for the time. The movie was getting strong word-of-mouth support. But MGM hadn't counted on the movie receiving much success and did not schedule distribution to more than the opening screens for the lead-up to Christmas. Thus, A Christmas Story disappeared from theaters, abruptly elbowed into the theatrical void by the bigger seasonal studio movies of the day, most notably Scarface and Christine. Ultimately, A Christmas Story collected about $19 million at the box office. It was a good showing, but not great. At the same time, however, home video and cable television were just beginning to grow in popularity, and A Christmas Story crept into the mainstream through videotape and cable broadcast. The rights to the movie were sold in '86 to Warner Brothers by MGM as part of a 50-movie package deal. In fact, MGM practically gave the movie away when it tossed A Christmas Story into the deal in order to simply meet the 50-movie quota. The cable network TNT first aired its 12-showing 24-hour marathon as a stunt in 1988, but popular demand turned the stunt into tradition. The annual marathon, now aired on TBS, starts every Christmas Eve and attracts more than 40 million people who tune in at some point to watch. A Christmas Story is one of the most popular holiday movies of all time, earning a place alongside It's a Wonderful Life and A Miracle on 34th Street. So here's a few fun facts about A Christmas Story. Again, it talks about Gene Shepard's book, In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. And this is what A Christmas Story was based upon. It is a collection of semi-autobiographical short stories that Shepard wrote for Playboy magazine during the 1960s. Actor Scott Farkas, played by Zach Ward, was created specifically for the movie and never appears in the book. In the book, Grover Dill is the only bully who torments Ralphie. The setting for the movie was based in Hammond, Indiana, the hometown of author Gene Shepard. Shepard grew up on Cleveland Street and went to Warren G. Harding Elementary School, just like Ralphie. The movie was actually filmed in Cleveland, Ohio, and Toronto, Ontario. The house from the movie is located just outside of downtown Cleveland, and the Higbee Building still stands in downtown Cleveland. The Christmas tree shopping scene and many of the inside shots of the house were filmed in Toronto, Ontario. One of Toronto's trademark red trolleys can be seen driving by the shot of the outside of the tree lot. Ralphie's school exteriors were filmed at Victoria School in St. Catharines, Ontario. To find an American city resembling the Indiana town of the 1940s, director Clark sent his location scouts to 20 cities before selecting Cleveland, Ohio, as the site for filming. The decision to film in Cleveland was due to the willingness of Higbee's, which was an actual department store, to allow the movie to be filmed inside the store. In addition to providing the voiceover narration, writer Gene Shepard had a cameo appearance in the movie as the grouchy department store customer who tells Ralphie to go back to the back of the line in the Santa line. Director Bob Clark also has a brief cameo appearance as Suede, the Parker family's dim-witted neighbor with a southern accent who stops to marvel at the leg lamp from across the street. The role of Mr. Parker, Ralphie's father, was originally offered to Jack Nicholson, who reportedly was interested in playing the part. Director Clark, however, lobbied hard for Darren McGavin. The producers worried about Nicholson's typically large requests, eventually approved of McGavin playing the part. Yano Anaya, who played Grover Dill, the toady, appeared in only two other films, but is probably best known as the evil paperboy with the war cry, $2, in the 1985 John Cusack comedy, Better Off Dead. For the scene in which Flick's tongue gets stuck to the flagpole, a hidden suction tube was used to safely create the illusion that his tongue had frozen to the metal. Author Gene Shepard's concept for the Major Award leg lamp was based on a real lamp, an illuminated knee-high logo. The style of the leg lamp for A Christmas Story was created by production designer Ruben Fried, who had never before seen or heard of a leg lamp. Three leg lamps were made for the movie, and all were broken on the set during the filming. The radio orphan Annie decoder pin that Ralphie receives is the 1940s Speed-O-Matic model, indicating that the movie takes place in December 1940. Different decoder badges were made each year from 1935 to 1940. By 1941, the decoders were made of paper due to World War II metal shortages. Some of the snow used in the scenes between the kids and the bullies was actually soap flakes and the firefighters' foam. The stars later remarked that they were slipping and sliding during the filming of the scenes. An elaborate fantasy sequence in which Ralphie joins Flash Gordon to fight Ming the Merciless was filmed but dropped from the final cut. Picture of the scene and costumes used in it are on display at A Christmas Story house and museum. A second fantasy sequence involving Black Bart and his men was cut from the film in favor of the backyard fantasy sequence. The deleted sequence involved Ralphie rescuing Santa from Black Bart's men while Santa is stuck in a chimney. His little brother Randy, in disguise, played one of Black Bart's men in the scene. His costume from the scene is on display at the Christmas Story House and Museum. The film was released just before Thanksgiving and became a surprise hit. By the time A Christmas Story rolled around, the movie had already been pulled from most theaters because it had been played out. After complaints were lodged at the theater owners and the studio, the film played on select screens until after the first year, 1984. A Christmas Story inspired the creation of the Wonder Years television show. That was one I didn't know. Prior to A Christmas Story, Peter Billingsley, who played Ralphie, gained fame as a correspondent for the variety show Real People. He also played Messy Marvin in Hershey's chocolate syrup commercials. Peter is now a producer, often working with his close friends Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau. His credits as a producer include Iron Man and The Breakup. He often appears in cameo roles in the movies he produces. Going back to director Bob Clark, unfortunately he passed away on April 7th, 2007, in a head-on collision when a drunk driver swerved into oncoming lane. Clark was just 4 months away from what would have been his 68th birthday. He will always be remembered for his great movies. I have to give A Christmas Story a solid 5 chainsaws out of 5 because it truly is a Christmas staple and will always be one of my favorite Christmas films. But sadly, this is all I have for tonight, folks. I hope that you have enjoyed tonight's episode. I want to give a big shout out to all of my friends and loyal listeners from all over Alaska, Washington, and all the way down to Arizona. You know who you are, and I sincerely thank you. Stay safe and keep listening. This is Horror After Hours, signing off. Good night, everyone. Hello, this is the Naughty Guy, Adam J. Keep listening to Horror After Hours with the Naughty Guy, as my friends and I, we discuss some of our favorite movies and some of our favorite novels. Bear Crossing Bed and Breakfast. We have a beautiful view which overlooks downtown Ketchikan. You can find us on the Airbnb app or on Facebook. You can contact us through either of these apps for any information. Skylar's Table offers cafeteria-style dining, fresh soups and salads, and paninis. And all of his meats are roasted fresh daily. If you're looking for great food, great prices, and even better company, come to Skylar's Table, a place for visitors. Podcast Swatting Flies Telling Lies. If you like a fun, crazy podcast with loads of information that you didn't know you need, give this one a listen. Bruce's show is always a lot of fun. You never know what he's going to say next, and I'm always tuning in to find out. Next, I got Lazy Mountain Brewing Company, located in Palmer, Alaska, owned by Neil and Sarah Gottschall. They're providing quality craft beers with crisp, clean flavor. Look for Lazy Mountain Brewing Company on Facebook. You will also find their beers all around the Anchorage area. They're just good, honest beers. That's, again, Lazy Mountain Brewing Company. Also look for my friend Danny's podcast. That's Hinterlands Media, where he discusses current topics and conspiracies. And also look for his new podcast called Hinterland Storytime. This should be a lot of fun. This is where he discusses his favorite fantasy, sci-fi novels, movies, and games. This really should be a lot of fun. Danny's a lot of fun, so give both his shows a listen. I know I will. And finally, the Naughty Guy. I finally have a Facebook page. Check it out. Give me a like and a follow to see all of my latest network. You can find my network in a few of the local stores around Ketchikan. You look for Maiden Voyage, Scanlan Gallery, and also the Alaska Outpost. Tell them the Naughty Guy sent you. Thanks a lot, folks. Keep listening.